Blog Talk Radio.
Garwin, you can find out more about our music by going to francyl.com, F-R-A-N-C-Y-L. Welcome again to the Cosmic Citizen. Paula Thompson is with me. Good morning, Paula.
Good morning, Andre. Good morning, everyone. Nice to be here again, Saturday morning.
As always, we are faithful, we're consistent, we are here. And today, we're going to talk about a topic that is dear to my heart and dear to the heart of our guest, because when I first started thinking about doing the Cosmic Citizen show a couple years ago, I asked this person what she wanted to talk about when she got on the air. And she said, I want to talk about spending time with God. So even back then, even 2 years ago, she was still hooked on spending time with God. She wanted to talk about that. So we are giving her the opportunity that she has been waiting for these 2 years. Today, our guest is Cheryl Cira. Cheryl Cira is a therapist in the Florida area. She has been reading the Urantia book, which is in South Florida. She's been reading the Urantia book since 1975, and she has a lot to say about spending time with God. It's obviously a very important topic to her, and I know she recommends it to her patients as well. So, Cheryl, welcome to the Cosmic Citizen.
Thank you, Andre. I'm very happy to be here.
Cheryl, okay, since I just mentioned the fact that you know, even 2 years ago wanted to talk, why is this topic so dear to your heart? Why is it so important to you?
Well, I consider doing this one of the most important decisions I've ever made in my life. And as I was thinking about this and thinking about, you know, exactly how long has it been since I actually started doing it, I looked back in my journals and I found that I started in October of 2006, and I've made probably more progress in my own growth since I started doing this than I had made in, you know, maybe all the years before. It's really helped me to grow, and that's something that's important.
You were telling me a story off the air about something that was kind of a catalyst that got you to start doing this on a daily basis. What was it?
Well, I need to say that I had years of trying different things that I thought would help me get closer to God and grow. And, you know, one of them had been, I started with Eastern meditation before I became a reader of the book, trying to sit and empty my mind, which I found impossible. I don't have that kind of a mind that can be emptied. I've realized that a lot of people don't have my kind of a mind. And then I had tried the listening meditation. I gave that one a good shot. For about 9 months, 20 minutes every day, and I found that that didn't do anything for me. And I'd made all these commitments over the years and written them down. I'm going to read the Urantia book every day. I'm going to pray every day. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And I hadn't done them, and I wasn't happy with that fact. And then about 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, I came across a book in the library. Actually, they were selling books, and this one was in the children's section of books, so I don't even know why I looked there, but it was a book that they were selling for 25 cents, I think. It was the story of a nun who actually lives here in South Florida. And I read her life story, and it was, you know, very, very interesting, and I really appreciated her dedication to God. But one of the things that she said in the book was that she wakes up every morning at 3 a.m., and spends, I think, 3 or 4 hours praying. And I thought, well, if she can do 3 hours every day, I can certainly do an hour. And that was the start of my commitment. From that point, I made up my mind that in the morning, before I started my day, I would spend an hour with God. And I've been doing it pretty much ever since.
So was that kind of what inspired you to do that? What inspired you? I mean, was that sort of the thing that finally was the clincher that said, okay, now I'm actually going to make this commitment and keep it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
God works in strange ways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, an hour in the morning, what a beautiful time to spend with God. And, you know, Cheryl, I've talked to other people who say that that's optimum time for them, too, that right when they're first waking up, they like to, just really stay and hang in that moment with the Heavenly Father. And I find that in my own case, and Jesus, too, you know, is when I really, well, right before I go to sleep and the first thing I do when I wake up.
Yeah.
And it's nice to start your day that way.
I think it's very important how we start our day. Very, very important. Because how you start the day sets the tone for the entire day. And I'm not going to claim that because I do this every single day I have a great day, because that's not so. But I certainly have, not only do I have a better chance at starting, at having a better day, but this is the kind of thing that over time you start to see the fruits of it in your life, even if you don't see it immediately.
Do you think everybody should do it in the morning, or do you think people should adjust based on what their personal preference is, or what's your take on that?
Well, you know, everyone has, you know, their own lives and their own schedules, and because I'm self-employed, I can do an hour in the morning. But I do think that no matter what a person's schedule is like, they should at least take 5 minutes to spend just sitting quietly before they go out the door alone, you know, in a room with the door closed if other people are, you know, in the house, and just turning to God first thing and just, you know, asking God to guide them through the day, making the commitment every day to do God's will, because, you know, that 5 minutes, even if it's just 5 minutes, that's okay. That is important to remind yourself first thing that you want to do God's will.
Now, do you advocate a special technique like centering prayer? I know our good friend Gard, it has become a great advocate of centering prayer, Father Thomas Keating's technique of...
Yes, and I know, and I've tried that, and I failed miserably at it. But yes, I do, in a way. I don't spend the entire hour in prayer, but one of the things I do, because to me it's very important that something be doable, that something be a technique that anyone can do. So what I, first of all, you know, I do set aside the time. That's the most important thing, is to set aside the time, however much the time is, even if it's just 5 minutes. But making the decision that you're going to spend the 5 minutes, let's say. But what I do is part of the time is I use in writing, daily writing, which I think is very important. And I write to God. I write to God every single day in my journal. And writing to God is something that anyone can do. You don't need to feel spiritual. You don't need to empty your mind. If what I'm writing to God is, it could be I'm really upset right now. I'm very angry, and I could be, writing about a whole bunch of stuff, about this one and that one. And, I share all my garbage with God.
Absolutely.
Because for one thing, writing is an excellent therapeutic technique.
Yes, yes.
I recommend that everyone write, do personal writing, and I recommend this to all of my patients. And the ones who do it are very glad they're doing it. They find it very helpful, because by writing, they're getting a lot of their frustrations and negative emotions off their chest, which means they're not building up, which means they're then going to be easier to live with. It's not just the negative things. I mean, another thing that I do is, I guess about a year and a half ago, I started a gratitude list. I have a special booklet just for that. And every day, the first thing I do, actually, in terms of my time, is I have to write at least one thing on the list, and it's got to be something new. I can't just keep saying the same things over and over again. So making myself think of something to be grateful for has also been a very good thing, because it's encouraged me to feel more grateful. And that's very important. And, Jesus says that practicing gratitude helps lead us to worship God.
Right. Cheryl, I want to just pick up on what you're saying about writing to God, because this is something I've been doing for a long time. And I have to admit, I'm not as consistent about it as you are. I haven't been doing it every day all the time. But one of the things that I have been doing, that I practice, that has really helped me is something called listening prayer. And it's what it is is you write to God. And then Bill and Kay Cooper teach this, by the way, which is you write to God, and then you listen to what you hear God saying back to your heart, and you write it down. That has been a really incredible thing. I remember some of the things, I've talked about this on the air before, but so many things you said I really resonate with. One is, I think for me, just me personally, it's very important for me to be authentic and real before God in my
prayer. Absolutely.
I'm not interested in it's really interesting. I come from an evangelical Christian background, and I love these guys, but one of the things that drives me crazy, sometimes I'm with them, and they start praying, and they stay praying. They don't talk normally the way you and I talk. They start saying things like, oh, we just lift up this person right now. Oh, we just lift this person up in the name of Jesus. And it's like, can't you just, don't speak Christianese to me. Just talk normally. I'll say this. When I write to God, sometimes I'll say, I'll swear on paper. I'll say,
me too.
I'm so pissed off, Lord. I'm having a shitty day. In fact, one of the things we're going to be doing, I'm trying to get a guest on our show named Susan Isaacs, who wrote a book called Angry Conversations with God, which I think is just fantastic.
Good for her.
And I'll tell you another thing I do, and tell me if this works for you. Instead of emptying my mind, okay, which is what the centering prayer people advocate, which I find doesn't work for me either.
Yeah.
One thing I do is I used to feel guilty when I would pray and then I would get distracted. Okay, I'd be praying for a long time and I'd start daydreaming and I'd feel guilty about it. And then I it's so interesting because I developed an interesting technique about how to deal with that, and it comes actually from C.S. Lewis's book, The Screwtape Letters. And for those who aren't familiar with that book, it's a book about a demon who tells his nephew, a junior demon, how to tempt a young Christian and corrupt his mind and screw him up. But one of the things in the book is the demon tells him, he says, make him feel guilty when he gets distracted when he prays. Make him feel guilty about that. And see, what I do now is when I pray and I get distracted, let's say I'm praying and all of a sudden a good rock and roll song comes into my head. You know what I do now? I start talking to God about that song. I say, Lord, I thank you for creating that artist. I thank you for creating, who created that song, because that's a great song and I really like it. And so I find that helps a lot, rather than trying to beat myself up and, use a whip on myself and play tug of war with myself, and say, feel, try to force myself to get back to you know, a quote centered state or whatever. I just try to take, you know, whatever thoughts I'm thinking and just continue to share those thoughts with God, which is exactly what the Aransas book tells us to do, to share our inner lives with God. To me, that means just that.
Absolutely.
It means to share everything that I'm
whatever
thinking.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. And you know, the whole guilt thing, I mean, Jesus, one of the things that Jesus says is that we should refuse to harbor feelings of guilt. And, you know, if I'm feeling guilty about something, I'll look at that thing and I'll make up my mind, you know, that, you know, if I've done something wrong or if I've hurt somebody or something that I feel bad about, I'll make up my mind that I will not do it again and ask God to help me with it and let go of the guilt that way.
You know, I want to share that quote, you guys, because I think it's so important, and I looked it up right away when you started talking about, you know, pouring out your heart to God and just telling Him whatever's in it. And I absolutely agree. I think that's what God wants us to do. He wants us to share the inner life with Him. And
yes.
The quote is from Part 3, The History of Urantia, Paper 111, coincidentally, which is a favorite for so many, The Adjuster and the Soul.
Oh, yes.
And Section 5, The Consecration of Choice. Interesting.
Yeah.
And the first sentence, the very first sentence, the doing of the will of God is nothing more or less than an exhibition of creature willingness to share the inner life with God.
Mm-hmm.
It's the very God who has made such a creature life of inner meaning value possible. Sharing is godlike, divine. God shares all with the eternal Son and the infinite Spirit, while they in turn share all things with the divine sons and spirit daughters of the universes. So, you know, it's interesting, maybe on that level, you know, they share, you know, obviously they share things that we wouldn't dream of sharing or wouldn't even think of, but by the same token, you can't be sanctimonious with God. He knows who you are. We're human beings. We are dealing on a very base level of existence. We're material beings, mortals, and He knows that our thoughts aren't going to be lofty and, you know, and it's okay.
Yes, it's fine. And you know, when I first read that section, and it's one of my favorites, definitely, one of the things that struck me about it, and I think that spiritual law is easy. I mean, I think it's doable. It's one of the things I love about the Urantia book. And I read the Urantia book pretty much almost every day because I continue to learned so much from it that's useful, is that spiritual law is doable and it's easy.
Yes.
We make it much more complicated than it has to be. We don't have to be able to sit and have a blank mind. We don't have to be able to do that. If we are just sitting and sharing our thoughts with God, what could be easier than that? I mean, we're thinking all the time anyway.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, it's not that God doesn't know what's in our mind because of our thought adjusters are in our mind. God knows everything that's in our mind. But the important thing is that we, by our free will choice, are turning to God and we're saying to God, Father, this is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm feeling. And that is what doing the will of God is. So, you know, what could be easier than that? Anyone can do it.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's really interesting you should say this because the book actually says what it says, that doing the will of God is nothing more nor less than creature willingness to share the inner life with God. Because, you know, this is so important because I think a lot of people think doing the will of God has to be something external. And they're saying no, that it's not that at all. And even though the book encourages service, it's interesting because I've heard some of your Urantia book readers, you know, poo-poo people like the nun you described and saying, well, they're not giving back to society. They're just praying. Well, you know, obviously, you know, they are doing God's will just by sitting, you know, by praying. You know, we don't know what good they're accomplishing, first of all, by praying. You know, we don't know what they could be having a profound impact on the planet by praying. Okay. But the point is that they are doing God's will. You know, they are, you know, that, and for, who are we to say that they're not? I mean, it's kind of a secular bias, I think we have. We think, well, if we're doing God's will, then you've got to be, you know, out being active and doing this or this, you know, and I'm not trying to minimize the importance of that. I'm just simply saying that, you know, let's say we're going through a season where we're not serving as much, but if we're spending a lot of time in prayer, we're still doing God's will.
It seems to me too that the best gift we can give God is ourselves.
Absolutely.
You know, the more we grow, the more we dedicate our will to doing God's will, and that's a conscious choice, and I think it's important to make that decision every single day. So the more we're growing, you know, the more we are giving, you know, God, you know, a person who's as good as they can be, and nobody can do that for us. The only one who can change us is ourselves. And as we are asking to do God's will, we are also helping to actualize God the Supreme. And that happens through decisions, action. So, you know, that's another part of doing God's will. But I also think that the more we grow and the more we want to do God's will, the more we will be of service to other people, and the more our service will be the best kind of service. We'll be acting in a wiser way. I mean, there are people who are consciously trying to do good to others, which is, of course, a wonderful thing. But what they're doing may not actually be helpful to other people. It might be hurtful, even if their motivation is correct. But when you're asking God to do His will, He's going to guide you to help others in a way that is really going to help them.
Cheryl, what you just said reminds me of another favorite quote, and it's from Paper One, Section One, the Father's Name. And I think what you just said is so important, and it is so key to our human happiness and our peace and our understanding that we don't have to bribe God, we don't have to force God, there are no magical words to reach God's heart. We know that there's another place in the book where it says words are irrelevant to prayer. God answers the soul's attitude, not the words. But this is about the human will and our dedication to God. And it says, the affectionate dedication of the human will to the doing of the Father's will is man's choicest gift to God. In fact, such a consecration of creature will constitutes man's only possible gift of true value to the Paradise Father.
Yes.
That resonates.
I have to highlight it.
Yeah, yellow. It's so deeply with me because we want to give God something.
Yes.
And our wanting to come to Him of our own free will, that's what He values most. Not that we were coerced or forced or frightened.
Absolutely.
Or pushed. But that we decided of our own free will, I love God. I want to be like Him. I want to come to Him because He is good. Because He is my God, my Father. He loves me. I feel that. I want to come to Him because He is there for me. And, you know, so this idea of carving out an hour every day or 20 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever to go and be with the greatest being in all of creation, to carve out a few minutes of your precious time.
Right.
To be with the first source and center of all that is and just be with Him, be in His presence. Better yet, invite Him into your whole day. But, you know, and that would be a good time to do it first thing in the morning. You know,
absolutely.
Father, be with me all day today. Help me be mindful of Your presence in everything.
Well, it's a relationship. I mean, you know, I mean, the Father is a relationship. And when there's somebody that you care about, you have to put some energy into that relationship. And basically what you have to do is you have to put some time into it.
Yes.
it's not asking all that much, really, to make a commitment to spending some definite time with God every single day.
Right.
And I think it helps to make it a, you know, to know that you're going to do it at a more or less certain time every day. It doesn't need to be exact.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
if you, I'm just thinking now about how we human beings are and how we establish habits. And if we're not more or less specific with when we're going to do something, it usually doesn't end up happening. You just leave it to chance.
Right. I want to say two things about that. One is that, you know, God. Yes, it's true that God, that we come to God of our own free will. I will say, though, that there are times, though, when God moves me, and because God knows my heart, and he knows that I want to please him, and he knows that I want, well, I shouldn't say please him, because he's already pleased with us, but he knows that I want to spend time with him. So there are times when he will initiate. He'll take the initiative, and he'll move me to pray, or he'll move me to, you know.
Yes.
So that does also happen. But I also want to talk a little bit. I know that we have a slight difference of opinion on this, Cheryl. But I want to bring this up because it's something that I think is really important. And that is, you know, regardless of the habit, when we start a new habit, regardless of the habit, whatever it is, one of the things I don't hear a lot of people discuss is a lot of people say, well, you just have to stay committed to it. You have to just, you know. But what I don't hear a lot of people discuss is what happens, you know, when we lose our motivation to do something. And I don't care whether it's spending time with God or exercising or whatever the new habit is. One of the things that you know, we have two parts of our brain. We have the limbic system, which is a part of our brain that, you know, is interested in eating and sleeping and going to the bathroom, okay, basically. And the other part of our brain, which is, you know, the cerebral cortex, where new habits are formed, okay. But the place where the old habits are formed, the limbic system, which is, I think, probably equivalent to what the Aranthropic calls the slothful animal mind, is much older and much stronger in a lot of ways than our spiritual nature. So when we start a new habit, it's going to pull us. It's going to want to pull us back and say, you know, and it's going to create inertia. So how do we, you know, what do we do to deal with that reality? And one thing I found that's very helpful for me, and I'm not going to tell anybody what to do here, but it's one thing that's really helpful for me, is to find an accountability partner. And I want to thank the Lord and praise the Lord that I found a new one today, because I made a conscious decision to do that. And and it's actually someone who is a Aranthropic reader, who's a listener to our show, and I won't say who it is, but this person asked me not to, so I won't. But this person, he and I agreed what we're going to do is we're going to call each other. He's going to call me in the morning every day, sometime when he gets to work, and he's going to say, you know, it's going to be a check-in call, okay, to make sure that we're going to start our prayer time, and then at the end of the day, you know, we'll go back to each other and share with each other what we prayed about, you know, for the day or whatever. And the reason, let me tell you why that's been so helpful for me. I find that I am more consistent when I have that kind of support. I find that I'm more consistent and I'm more focused in my time with God. Not that I won't do it at all if I don't have that kind of support, but I find it's much, much more consistent. I find I'm much more consistent and I find I'm much more focused. To me, I guess, let me give you the analogy. The analogy I give is, you know, I can push a rock up a hill by myself, or I can use a wheelbarrow. You know, if I use or maybe a better analogy would be, it's kind of like playing tug of war, okay? When you've got the limbic system on the one hand telling you to just sit in front of the TV and eat pizza, and you've got the you know, your spiritual nature telling you to spend time with God, it's like playing tug of war. What happens when you play tug of war? When you play tug of war, one of two things happens. Either nobody wins, or the weaker party usually loses. And in our case, unfortunately, in the human condition, for most of us, the weaker party is our spiritual nature. But here's the thing. If I get somebody else on my team to help me pull the rope, you know, I find that I'm going to do a better job. So, and I know, you know, we've talked about this before, Sean. I know you're saying, you know, that shouldn't be a necessity. But it's not absolutely necessary for me, but it's a huge help. And I really would encourage people to, you know, if they want to help stay motivated, I find it's a great way, you know, to help do that.
Well, I mean, it is helpful. I'm not going to say it isn't helpful. But I think one of the reasons there's a couple of reasons I take issue with this. One is that I don't want anyone to think that it's a necessity in order to do this, because it's not. Because if anyone thinks it's a necessity, then you know, then they may not end up doing this. I mean, I've been doing this, you know, for almost 3 years, and I haven't had anyone to, you know, remind me or encourage me or anything else. I mean, we have free will, which is, you know, which God gives us. In fact, it's the only thing we have really of our own. And if we make the decision that we want to spend time with God, then we don't have to rely on somebody else calling us, somebody else calling us twice a day, because I can promise you that if you have to rely, it's hard enough to rely on yourself, but if you have to then rely on somebody else too, being there to remind you, you know, you're going to run into trouble with this. The other thing is that once you establish the habit, it takes on a life of its own. That's the beauty of establishing a habit. If you do this long enough, let's say you've done this, let's say you've spent 5 minutes every morning with God for 2 months, as an example. And if we're just talking about 5 minutes, there's no reason anybody, you know, a person could do 5 minutes no matter what situation they're in, unless they're in a coma. But if you've done this, you know, for a little while, you don't need the motivation. It has become a habit. I mean, you know, does a person have to be motivated to brush their teeth? You know, it's something that probably everyone's been doing for years. They don't need motivation to do it. So I don't want to have to be dependent on motivation, and this is an argument that I have with my patients a lot when it comes to instituting things in their lives like exercise. Because if we have to rely on our feelings, God help us. I mean, our feelings, you know, eat too much ice cream the night before and you're not going to feel like doing things. But if we've made a commitment, I mean, you know, people who are working, for example, do they have to have motivation to get up and work?
No, but they have an incentive. They don't go to work, they're not going to make money. And they're going to starve, you know.
Incentive is a good motivation too. It's a good motivator. But I have to interject that with things that are difficult for certain people, you know, some things come easier for other people than and I think that you know, it's like you gave the example of brushing teeth. Probably if your parents didn't get after you every day when you were a mm-hmm. child to get up and brush your teeth, you never would have developed that habit. And so at first it may help to have an external motivation or what I would call a support system. You know, in anything you try to do, especially if it's hard for you, and I would use the example of giving up an addictive behavior.
True.
You know, it's absolutely proven that a support system, somebody who, like in the 12 steps, your sponsor,
true,
will really help to keep you motivated. And, you know, it's the old 12-step adage, fake it till you make it, which is, I think, what Andre is talking about, having a little bit of external motivation to help create a better habit. And once it is a habit, then it's a habit. And now, you know, nobody needs to motivate you because you can see how good it is for you. You've experientially realized now that it's a good thing, and you're gladly incorporated into your daily routine. But, you know, until you get to that point, sometimes you do need somebody, a support system or somebody to give you external motivation.
Well, if you have it, great. I mean, if a person has that kind of support system, then of course they can take advantage of it. But I'm talking about, there's a lot of people that don't have spiritual support systems or don't necessarily have support systems. I would also say that something like giving up an addictive behavior is a lot harder than spending 5 minutes with God every day. I mean, to make the decision 5 minutes every day, It's not a hard thing to do. Dealing with an addictive behavior is extremely difficult. And really, you know, without 12-step programs, for example, people often find it next to impossible. But, you know, we're talking now about something that's easy, that doesn't require giving up anything, and also doesn't even require dealing with your chemistry, which
is
part of the problem with
say
this. Behavior.
I'm glad you mentioned the 5 minutes thing, because if you're talking about 5 minutes, then yes, I agree with you. And by the way, I do think, and one thing I will agree with you on, Cheryl, is that people a lot of times, you know, try to do too much. They have goals that are just insane.
Yes, and that's a recipe for failure.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that. I mean, I used to think that, you know, I used to think I wasn't spiritual because I didn't spend, you know, 2 hours with God praying, or because when I first got my treadmill, I said I was going to spend 2 hours a day doing the treadmill, I will say this though, that I do find that, you know, again, when I have an accountability partner, that the time does become more focused, more intense, and a little longer than it would be if I didn't have it. I think I want to also interject, it's not just that I'm relying on this person. They're relying on me too. It's a mutual thing. You know, it's not just that I'm relying on them and they're babysitting me. This is a mutual win-win sort of situation. The other thing is that I don't think it's that hard to find this kind of support system, because I think that a lot of people want this in their lives. I mean, I think if we actually went up to some of our friends and said, I mean, that's what I did today. I called this person and said, how would you like to try this? And he was ecstatic about it. Absolutely, he was extremely excited. He's like, this would be so good for me, you know. And I think a lot of people just haven't even thought about doing it.
Well, as I say, Andre, if a person has that, great, use it. But if our spending 5 minutes with God every day has to be dependent on having that in our lives, then, you know, fortunately, it doesn't have to be that way. That's what I'm saying. And, you know, not everyone does have that in their lives. I don't want the people who don't have that in their lives to think, oh, I can't do this, because first I need to find a spiritual support system. You know, we have everything we need in order to do this. We have the thought adjuster within our minds. We have our guardian angels. And we have our free will. So this is why I'm sort of arguing, you know, with you about it. It is a good thing, but it's not a necessity.
Well, it's like I said before. It's about, it's like pushing the rock without, you know, up the hill without the wheelbarrow.
What I'm saying is making the commitment to spend 5 minutes with God is not hard. And five minutes is not a lot of time. So I don't want the listeners to think that this is a harder thing than it is. I'm not talking about everyone making the commitment to spend an hour with God every day, okay? But my feeling is that if a person makes the commitment to spend 5 minutes every day with God, no matter what, and they do it every single day, then there may be days when they might spend more time. But even if they don't spend more time, if they do 5 minutes every single day, and that keeps going on and on and on, it will start to produce results in a person's life. You know, you'll start to see the fruits of the Spirit increase in your life. And when you see some of these positive things happen, when you see that you're changing, when you can see that you're becoming maybe more patient, maybe more grateful, that in itself starts to produce such positive reinforcement for doing this that it becomes something you will never give up, no matter what, because it's a pleasure.
You know, I take your point so well, Cheryl, and I think you're absolutely right. I think this doesn't need to be harder than it is. 5 minutes, please, 5 minutes with God. I mean, Jesus, his goal was unbroken communion.
That's right. That's
the
goal.
And I think, obviously, I mean, I consciously want to invite God into my whole day.
Absolutely.
And I embrace the fact that every thought I have, he's in on. I know that. I'm conscious of that. Every thought I have, I'm conscious of the fact that God is aware of that thought. And, you know, I have to chuckle when I read the life and teachings of Jesus, and they tell us what Peter was thinking. Because,
yeah.
You know, I think someday, you know, are they going to tell me how you were thinking this, you know? And I'm going to say, yeah, you're right, I was thinking that. And you know, our thoughts are real. There's no secrets in the universe, let's face it. I mean, this is very, this is scary to some people. I know, because I've met a lot of people who have read the Urantia book, and when they realize that God is in them, they are in dread that God is in on everything they're thinking. Everything. You know, and it terrifies them at first. I've had friends tell me, my gosh, when I realized the gravity of that truth, I was terrified to think that God knows everything I think. And I understand that. We like to think that we have this private little inner life, and nothing is in on that. But the truth of the matter is, that's not true. God is in on it.
That's right.
He craves to share the inner life with us. And Jesus said at one point, he said, you would do better to live as though in the presence of God. It's important
right.
to know about the fact of God. You would do better to feel his presence. And I think what really changes people and what you're getting at is, you know, you spend 5 days, 5 hours or minutes a day with God, hopefully more than that. But now you're realizing God is real and he's in you and he's with you. And he's everywhere present. And whither shall you go to get away from him? You can't. It doesn't matter. Embrace the presence of God. Live in that presence. And that changes people. That changes people because there are no secrets.
Well,
you know
the Urantia book talks about how God honors the faintest flicker of faith. And my feeling is, no matter where any of us are, you know, we have to start somewhere. And just because a person reads the Urantia book doesn't make them any kind of a, you know, spiritual guru. It gets down to really how do you spend your time. And I think that it's important to start small, but be regular. It's instituting a spiritual habit. And like I say, it's very important to start small because, you know, that's the only way we institute any kind of a habit, whether it's exercise or you know, whether it's changing our eating or anything we do, is to start with one small habit but do it regularly.
Yeah.
It takes root. It's like a little seed.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that in my own life, I have been a person who makes a decision to do something and then goes overboard. Exercise is a perfect example. I end up in pain.
Oh,
and then,
wow.
Of course,
and then
when
you can't exercise for months.
Right. So it's counterproductive.
Exactly.
And you really do need to take small steps. It's like that great quote that says, you know, loyalty is an impressive reality, and the best way to become a frog is to live loyally as a tadpole.
Absolutely.
Every day.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what you're talking about.
Well, it is. And you know, because I'm, you know, blessed to work with people and to, you know, to help them, you know, make changes in their own lives, I've had, you know, many years of experience of seeing what works and what doesn't work. And, you know, the need for people to make a commitment to some kind of a small change, but to do it regularly.
Uh-huh.
It helps to write down a commitment, too. I mean, I would suggest, you know, that anyone who wants to start doing this, you know, first of all, get themselves a notebook, just a regular notebook, not a night, and, you know, not a beautiful one, just a, you know, regular one from the drugstore, and date the page and write down to address to the Father, write down a commitment. You know, write down, Father, I'm going to commit from this day forward that I'm going to spend 5 minutes with you every single day. And it's going to be at, you know, a more or less a certain time, preferably in the morning. And then you sign that commitment, because when we write down a commitment and we sign it, it is much more likely that we're going to carry it through.
It's like a contract. You make that commitment.
Absolutely.
Consecrate your will. Hey, we have
Absolutely.
A caller. Shall we take a caller?
Sure.
Caller, you're on Blog Talk. Citizen. Hello?
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 Do you know what area code it is, Paula?
No, it's coming up as 111.
Oh.
So.
Really faint.
Yeah.
Something's not working.
I hear an echo, too. Sorry, caller. Okay, carry on. Yeah, I really take that to heart, Cheryl, and I think it's important. And I think, you know, from your point of view, having helped many people, you know, with just that little nudge to start a good habit, not to dive into the deep end and drown, you know.
Exactly.
But
we have to start small. And if I give somebody an assignment, for example, and they don't do it, and I ask them, you know, why or, you know, whatever, what I may do with that same assignment is I may make it even smaller. I mean, if the person's assignment has been to, to look into exercise, let's say, and to, look for a gym, just as an example, you know, and they don't do it, then the assignment, you know, for the next time I see them may be just to get out the yellow pages and to look at the list.
Right.
Because that's an even easier thing to do. But the important thing usually with trying to do anything is to break through the inertia. And, you know, if a person who does want to exercise, if they even, you know, make that decision that they're going to get out the yellow pages and you know, look up gyms, not even to call anybody, just to open it up to that page, that in itself is breaking through the inertia. And they may be more willing to take the next step the next time.
What do you think is at the heart of people not being willing? I think it's a control issue myself, but I really would have.
Yeah, I think there's a number of different things that it could be.
Because obviously we want to do good things for ourselves, and we tend to be self-destructive or at least not self-constructive. And I often think that somewhere somebody took away our sense that we have the right to decide about that. And maybe they put too much importance on it, or they made it seem like it wasn't our decision or our idea, it was their idea, because it was something they wanted, not something we wanted. And so we rebel against that.
That's one possibility, and that certainly may be true for some people. But, you know, one of the things that impressed me, you know, of what it says in the book is how it talks about, the slothful animal mind rebels.
Uh-huh.
So it seems to me that every time we try to do something positive, we can pretty much depend on some part of ourselves actively trying to get in there and resist. And, you know, this is certainly the experience. I mean, I've had this experience with myself, and I've seen other people have the experience with themselves also. I mean, if I was a fundamentalist Christian, I'd say, you know, it's the devil getting in there to try and sabotage things.
But see, Cheryl, this is why, and I feel really, really torn about all this, because I really don't want to continue arguing about this motivation issue. But the thing is, to me, this is, I mean, you're a therapist. Most people don't know this that are listening, but I'm beginning a life coaching practice, okay? So I'm very interested in the whole notion of how people change too. But to me, you know, I guess my question is, how do we outsmart that slothful animal mind?
We ask God for help.
So that it doesn't constantly keep cropping up.
We ask God for help.
Okay, I agree with that. I agree with that.
But I'm
also saying, okay, let's say, you were saying, for example, about writing down a commitment and signing a contract, okay? I agree with that, except that my point that I'm trying to make here is, let's take any kind of goal we set, okay? One of the reasons that I give the analogy on my website about a classroom, okay? When you're in a classroom, what is it you have? You have deadlines, you have due dates, you have somebody who's counting on you to get something done, okay? And the fact that someone else is counting on you, at least I found my experience, means I'm more likely to get it done than if I just try to impose the deadline myself. Okay, now I'm more likely to find excuses to put it off. Okay, if I start a habit, let's say even take spending time with God. Now I agree with you that 5 minutes is not asking a lot. That's true. Okay, but even that, if I start a new habit, whatever it is, okay, but we're talking about spending time with God, I find that if I start doing it myself, there's a momentum that builds and I get into it, you know, for a while. But then there are days when I just say, oh, forget it, I'll just do it, you know, and it's because I don't, and because I just think that the slothful animal mind rebels, and so, you know, we do lose that motivation. And that's why I'm saying, again, I'm going to, you know, keep cheering for this idea of having, you know, a third party or having an external motivator to, you know, to help you along. And I don't see any other answer.
Well, I think that one of the things that we all need to look at in knowing ourselves is, what are the things we're telling ourselves? What are the beliefs we have? I think you have the belief that if you don't have somebody who's going to encourage you, you can't do this. And I think that's nonsense, Andre. I think, you know, I think that if, you know, if a person wakes up every single day and you know, even while they're lying in their bed and they say to God, help me do your will today, I mean, if they want to remember to just do that while they're lying in bed, I'm not talking about this being the 5 minutes with God. I'm talking about making the decision every day that they want to spend the 5 minutes with God, okay? And, you know, maybe they'll make that decision and maybe they'll forget, probably, maybe at first, that while they're lying in their bed, they're going to ask God to help them through the day, okay? But, you know, if they take a sticky note and write it down, you know, maybe just write the word God on it and stick it where they're going to see it.
Okay, now stop for a second.
You know that
I can't see sticky notes.
Well, okay. This is true.
Maybe that's part of a problem.
This is true.
Maybe that's an external. But that's my point. That's an external reminder.
Okay.
That may not be another person, but it's an external reminder. You know, I'm going to tell you. We have a. I have a friend who works at a church, or she volunteers for a church. Okay. People at the church, you know, they're volunteers. You know, they agreed to make a voluntary commitment to do whatever it is. The church still sends them emails and reminds them that they're supposed to do certain things. Because I just don't see how you can get around the fact that people forget, that people. I mean, I wake up in the morning. Even if I agreed to make a commitment to spend 5 minutes with God every day, I guarantee that when I wake up in the morning, God is not the first thing that comes to my mind.
Well, of course not. But okay. As a blind person, what is it that you have or that you have around you that can serve as some kind of a reminder for you for anything? I mean, what do you do? How do you
rely on my memory quite a bit more than most.
You do. Okay. Well, no, I understand that. But is there anything else?
The only thing I could think of might be when I check my email. You know, that's another thing I wanted to bring up. Okay, let's say that your goal is to read the Urantia book, some part of the Urantia book every day. Okay, because that could be part of your spending time with God.
I don't think that,
and here's another example. I think we should make this as easy as possible.
I agree.
Okay, and here's an example, okay? I am on an email list. I don't read the Urantia book every single day, but I'm on an email list right now that is run by a guy who posts extensive passages from the Urantia book on a pretty regular basis. Okay, so I'm already on that list. I don't have to go out of my way. It comes into my inbox when I check my email. That's something I do anyway. So I don't have to make the extra effort to go out and pick up the Urantia book. Okay, so I think if we can do that, if we can find tools like that, you know, I think that's another helpful way to do it.
I think it is important to, you know, find some kind of a tool or something that is going to remind you to to spend the 5 minutes every day. But like I say, once it becomes a habit, then that's no longer an issue. But everyone needs to find some way initially to remind themselves in terms of just getting the 5 minute habit started. Because again, I don't want anyone to think that this is a big deal, because 5 minutes every day is not a big deal. Now, I mean, I realize that for you, not having, you know, visual sight, you know, it becomes more complicated. But for a person who has their sight, there's many ways they can remind themselves, you know, first thing in the morning that they are going to do this. I mean, for anybody who drinks coffee, for example, I mean, and I do drink coffee before I spend my hour with God. I mean, I'm not, you know, it's not like I do it first thing, you know, falling out of bed. I drink my coffee first, or I take my coffee, you know, into my, you know, room with me. I mean, if people could put, you know, some people put sticky notes on the bathroom mirror, because they know they're going to go to the bathroom first thing. And, you know, there's the reminder right there.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of might be to put a Braille label somewhere.
All right.
That's not the only thing I can think of.
I'm not
used to doing that, because it was something that I've never really. You know, I mean, the only thing I've labeled is my microwave and probably my CD player. I'm going to get labeled, but
okay.
You know, it's not something I'm used to doing. But it's something that's something I could probably do.
But I mean, you know, the thing is, in order to start anything new, especially at the very very beginning, like the first week, let's say, we do have to be creative in thinking of, well, now how am I going to remind myself? I just take issue with you on having to depend on somebody else in order to do this. But I also want to say, I'm reading this book now that I recommend to everybody, because I think it's really helpful. It's called Change Your Brain, Change Your Life, and it's by Dr. Daniel Amen.
Yeah, I've heard him. I've
Amen.
Heard him speak, actually.
Yeah, I heard him speak, too. He was on public television. It's really excellent. The book talks about the brain having to do, especially the parts that influence our emotions, you know, anger, depression, attention deficit disorder, but he also talks about these areas in terms of how they affect other parts. And he gives certain behavioral prescriptions, you know, that will help a person who has problems with depression, you know, different things they can do or whatever it is. But one of the things he says in this book, and I'm, you know, learning a lot from it, is when we try and learn new patterns or change our behaviors in some way, it's very good for our brain. It helps our brain to, you know, stay younger. And you know, because of reading this, I've been consciously trying to change some of the, you know, like wear totally different clothes and, you know, sit on a different side of the room if it's a room I usually go to and things like that, just to provide some changes. So what I'm saying is, if you're trying to start a new habit, you know, thinking outside of your own box, in your case, maybe a Braille label or whatever, is good for your brain anyway.
Well, this is where I would agree with you, Cheryl. I'll concede one thing. It doesn't have to be another person. But the point is that it has to be something. You still have some external thing, that whether it's a post-it note or whether it's something that reminds you. You're not just depending. Okay, I agree with you about free will, but there's a difference between will and willpower. I think willpower is extremely weak. It's like trying to, you know, get out of quicksand. You know, I think that if you have something, so you're not just trying to force yourself to do something. You have something that's reminding you, whether it's another person or whether it's an external post-it note or whatever it is. You know, you have something that is. I think that there is a an idea out there that I just don't agree with. It's sort of I believe it's a false idea of adulthood, which is the idea that, you know, once we're adults, we shouldn't need all the things that children need to remind them to do things. But I actually, frankly, don't think we're that much different than children.
Well, no, I certainly agree there. And you know, in terms of so-called being an adult and, you know, supposedly, you know, doing certain things, you know, I think we're all children no matter how old we are. And that's why I don't, you know, for myself, I don't have any problem, you know, giving myself props for things. I mean, anything that I need to do, for example, I always, you know, write it down and keep lists and things like that, because I know I really don't even expect to remember things. So I write everything down. I give myself as much help as I can in doing things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I think you brought up a very good point earlier, about the fact that, Andre, you have a disadvantage.
Yes.
And I think you guys are essentially saying the same thing. It's just that Andre has to depend on people. You know, Andre,
yes.
he spent time with me at Christmas. Andre, I hope you don't mind if I share something, because it was touching to me. You know, we don't know what it's like to be blind.
Yes.
Unless we are blind. We
yes.
can't imagine. And Andre came and spent a week with me and my family at Christmas. And I got the full measure of what it takes for Andre to do things that we so easily take for granted.
Yeah.
And he's never had it any differently. It's not like Andre thinks, well, this is a hassle for me. It's how he exists. But I'll just give you an example of how he has come to depend on people, and it was the greatest lesson in faith for me.
Mm.
He put out two bills, and he said to me, Paula, which one is the 20 and which one is the 5? And it seems like a silly and inane thing that it wouldn't matter much, but I realized how easily somebody like Andre can be taken advantage of.
Mm.
But he's not. And
yeah.
he tells me that people help him. I think I even commented to you, Andre, my gosh, that's something I never thought of. A
yeah.
simple little thing about knowing which bill was which. And I said, you have to depend on people to be honest with you. And he said, yes, but Paula, you'd be surprised. People never let me down.
Wow.
And so it was really touching to me. It was really touching to me to know that, and to know, you know, when I dropped him off at the curbside at the airport, and he assured me, Paula, don't worry about it. You can do this. I can do this all the time.
Yeah.
I dropped him off at the curbside looking so vulnerable to me. And here he had his bags, and he went up to the cab, and the last thing I saw as I pulled away was two strangers, one on either arm, helping him in.
Wow.
And so, you know, Andre, I think if you have a friend who is willing to call you every day.
Yeah.
But I want you to, okay, everything you're saying is absolutely true. And I'm really glad you brought this up, Paula, actually, because it's going to give me an opportunity to do something which I've never done on the air. I've talked about it, but I've never actually done it. And it relates exactly to what we're talking about. But before I do that, let me say this. Everything you're saying is absolutely true, okay? But I also know from my own experience that it's, and again, and you know, it's okay, Cheryl, if you and I differ on this a little bit. It's okay.
Sure.
Because we're both trying to grow spiritually, and I think that's what matters, you know.
Absolutely.
And if I use a different tool than you do or whatever, so, but you know, as I said before, this relationship I have with this person who's agreeing to do this, it's not just a one-way thing. It's not just me depending on them. They are welcoming it. They were so excited about it. I can't even tell you. And the other thing is, the other thing I want to, and by the way, I want you to know, I'm not depending on this person to pray with me. Oh, there's nothing wrong with that, but I'm not doing that. I'm still having my solitary prayer time with God. Okay, so I'm not, you know, the person is. But anyway, I wanted to share something with you guys, because we were talking about writing letters to God. Okay, and I want to share with you an example of one that I did that I've kept. I've kept a lot of these in notebooks, and now I'm using my keeping them in a folder on my email, in my email, on the email program, okay? But I want to share with everyone an example of what it's like to share our most vulnerable, you know, thoughts with God, and share our inner life with God. This is something I wrote about 3 years ago. Let's see if I can, or actually, no, it's more than that. Let's see here. I'm trying to find it now. Okay. Oh, shoot. You know what? I just realized that I have the wrong... Okay. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, you guys. I should have been more prepared. But what time do we have, Paul? How are we doing on time?
We have plenty of time on
here. Okay. And by the way, if anybody wants to call in, please do. I was just looking through my journal so that... and I'm just trying to find this... let's see. Okay. Here we go. Okay. I want to explain to everybody some things. Back in 2003, I went to therapy with a Christian counselor. I went to therapy for some extremely painful things that had to do with my blindness, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Back when I was a child, there are basically two extreme ways to treat a blind person. Okay, you can raise a blind child to you know, everybody feel sorry for them and everybody do everything for them. Okay, but the other way that was just as wrong was I was made to feel like I could never ask for help,
mm-hmm.
and I mean literally. And you have to be careful what you say to kids because kids take everything very literally.
Yeah.
And you know, I literally believed I wasn't supposed to ask for help. And I literally believed that. And I thought that if anybody did anything for me, that was some sort of a crime. And that I was, you know. And a lot of people expected me to do things when I was a child that scared me to death. And you're like, I'll give you an example. When I was a kid, I was told, you're going to have to learn to cook. If you're going to be independent, you're going to have to. And I got to tell you something. I think cooking is a lot of fun. And especially if I'm dating a beautiful woman, I love to help her cook.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel comfortable cooking over a hot stove alone if I can't see what I'm doing. It's, you know, that's not something that I'm comfortable with. Now, there are some blind people that do it, but you know what? If you're really honest with, if you really listen to what they tell you, they'll tell you that they burn their fingers all the time. And they burn.
Mm.
Well, you know, I can't afford to burn my fingers because I read Braille, you know?
Right.
And there are things that are, you know, and, you know, I was expected, you know, there are things, I was taught how to cross busy streets by myself. But I got to tell you, these days, I don't cross a busy intersection alone. I mean, I use a cane, but I don't cross it alone because, you know, I'm missing a very important sense. I'm too scared to depend only on my ears, you know, to cross a busy street. So even though I learned how to go with the traffic beside me instead of the traffic in front of me, I never felt particularly comfortable with it. And I, you know, and anyway, so I went through a very painful process because I really thought there was something wrong with me. I thought I was inferior because I thought all the other blind people did all these things themselves, and they never got help with anything. And I was just totally, you know, and I must be this total, lazy, good for nothing. You know, I just wasn't trying hard enough. You know, that was my problem. You know,
mm-hmm.
Not that I had a disability, I just wasn't trying hard enough. So I was this. I got to tell you guys, this sent me into a terrible depression for about 18 months. Okay, I was really upset. But the good news is, it forced me to really become close to God.
Yeah.
At that time, okay? And I want to share with you guys some listening prayer. And this is a letter that I wrote to God. I'm going to share with you what God said back to me. This is back in July 2003. Here's what I said. I said, Dear Lord, as you know, the last several weeks have been difficult and painful for me. I feel like I've been in therapy, your therapy, even though I'm not actually seeing a counselor yet. And this is without a doubt the hardest work I've ever done in my life. It's emotionally taxing, draining, and exhausting. But refusing to do it won't make it go away. Doing this work will now have tremendous payoffs down the road. I'm confronting feelings and memories that I've tucked away for years. They've just resurfaced from time to time, but never this deeply. But Lord, you're determined to heal me, and you're doing radical surgery on me. Thank you for giving me what I need. Lord, I've been focusing so much on my weaknesses that I've forgotten about the gifts, strengths, and talents you've given me, talents that I use to serve others as well as myself. Lord, please remind me. And here's what he said. And actually, I'm going to read one more besides this one because actually I was reading the wrong one. But here's what he says. My dear beloved child, I am so proud of you. You are incredible. The abuse issues surrounding your blindness have been the greatest hurdles in your life, and you're crossing them. You don't even need me to tell you many of these truths because you're realizing them yourself. You still have moments of weakness, but they're getting smaller and less overwhelming. Andre, you've always responded to my calls. You truly are my good and faithful servant.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard me whisper I'm going to skip one thing because sometimes I hear things and they're not actually from God. Sometimes we get things that say like that and we get little emotional impulses that we think are from God and they're really not.
Yeah,
that's okay with me though because
you know
what? It's kind of like, you know, when you're a child, sometimes you think your parents are talking to you and it's really somebody else or sometimes you mishear. Okay. Let's see. Let's see here. Okay, here's one. Here's the irony. One of your strengths is that you're not a strong person. Strong people think they don't need me. Strong people make people close to them miserable because they're not willing to be close themselves. Andre, one of your greatest strengths is your need for other people. Relying on others when you need them is not only okay, it's smart and efficient. Remember, let's see, it also gives you an opportunity to get close to people. Andre, you have deep, meaningful friendships. Do you know how few people are blessed with that gift? That you have made deeper and depth and closeness a priority in your life, and you make a conscious effort to invest in your friends. Look at all the compliments you give out. Look at all the gratitude you express. You don't have to impress people by trying to be more independent. What impresses your close friends is the courage with which you are facing the demons from a broken, abusive childhood.
Mm.
And let me say one last thing, and it's very important. Oh, actually, no. Okay, this is some of this stuff again is not. I actually was reading the wrong entry, but the point I'm making is, you know, there one of the reasons I know this is God is because God was saying things to me that I wouldn't say to myself. You know, I'm used to condemning myself and telling myself I was miserable and I was this, that. And God wasn't saying those things to me. Another example, God said to me, one of the most important lines he said was, "I am not the person you think I am." That was really important because, you know, for so many years I thought I had all these negative voices in my head, like voices from my parents, and I would confuse those voices with the voice of God. And to actually hear God say that to me directly, you know, that was a real... Anyway, I read the wrong
oftentimes,
the point.
Andre, people will affirm that negativity by, you know, I think a lot of times people like to make us doubt God. And doubt that we are living according to God's plan or whatever. And, you know, you've expressed this to me many times that, you know, people will say, well, Andre, maybe it's God's will that you haven't found the right person yet. You know, and maybe you're going against God's will by even looking for the right person, you know.
Yeah.
So we oftentimes put doubt in each other about the Heavenly Father. And I think that what you're doing and what you're advocating, Cheryl, is to have the relationship firsthand so that there are no interveners.
Absolutely.
You know, nobody should intervene in your relationship with God. And I think if the Urantia book is saying anything, it's saying that. Overriding through the whole book is this notion that you and I and all of us can have a relationship with God without middlemen, without...
Well, that's one of the things that Jesus came to teach us, you know, was that, you know, God is our Father, our individual Father, and we don't need anybody else to stand between us and Him. We just go to Him directly.
Right. And right. So this technique, and, you know, it's people on the board have made comments about, I can go out in my yard where it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I can commune with God out there, and that's what I like to do, and that's how I commune with God. And Anne made a comment that was so poignant for me as we were discussing, as Andre, you were sharing. She said, in my opinion, sharing our innermost thoughts with someone we trust is also a way of writing to God. You know, this is so important because it's like Jesus telling his apostles, when you once discern that God is in you, then presently you will discern that He is in others.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I had a great epiphany once standing in a line at Disneyland because it was a negative. I was having a negative experience standing there in line, as most of us do. We hate to stand in line. And, you know, especially a line that's going to go on for an hour and we know it. For a five-minute ride, you know, and so much life is like that. I mean, it's like preparing for a year for a vacation that lasts a week, you know.
Yeah, right.
You know, so much of life is like standing in line for an hour for a five-minute ride. But I'm standing in line, and I'm surrounded by all these people because it's at Disneyland, you know, and they have the lines at Snake. And so it's like you're just standing in the middle of this crowd, moving inch by inch. And I started contemplating, okay, how can I make this a positive? I want to turn this around and make it a positive, and it just dawned on me immediately. Each one of these human beings that's around me has a fragment of the infinite, almighty, beautiful, gracious, glorious God in them. And then the next thought I had was, wow, I'm surrounded by God. I'm surrounded by God.
Right.
And I reveled. I reveled in that moment. I said,
yeah.
Wow, thank you, Father. Thank you for reminding me that God is in every single one of these human beings. And that at any given moment, you surround me. And that I can ask, I can pray, and chances are it will be another child of yours who will answer my prayer. Because you're in him or her, and because they are guided. The reason I found the Urantia book, it came to me as the answer of a prayer coming directly through another human being.
Oh, yes.
And so that was, I thought that was a really good point made on the board, that oftentimes the answer to prayer or the reflection of prayer comes from another human, and it doesn't have to be done alone. It shouldn't be either or, but both and. And I know right now,
absolutely.
Cheryl, you're holding up the reality of spending time alone with God, and that's absolutely valid. I think we need to do that. But it's also important, too, to realize how important God ministers to us through our fellows.
Oh, very definitely true. But, of course, you know, in a way, one thing is, you know, in a way it starts with your relationship with God. What I mean is, even when you were standing on that line, for example, and you were basically asking God, how can I make this a positive, you know, experience? You were directing that thought to God.
Right.
And he did answer you in a way through a thought also, but he also, you know, and you were looking around and seeing your fellow brothers and sisters. But if you hadn't started with talking to God in your mind, I mean, of course, I find too for myself, you know, very often, I mean, if I'm having like an especially, you know, if I'm having an especially negative day, and maybe I'm not thinking of God later on in that day, even though I've started, you know, my day with God. But very often I find that sometimes things will happen where I feel like God is helping me and lifting me up, very often through other people, often through things people say or things people do, because I feel like having spent any time with God at all, you know, it's like God's grace. I mean, you know, he's still there to lift us up no matter what.
Absolutely.
Right.
I'm sorry. I don't normally do this, Paula, but I'm still trying to figure out how much more time do we have. Do we have like 40 minutes left or so?
Yeah.
Okay. There are two things I want to make sure we do before we finish the show. One, I hate to be so self-indulgent, but I do want to read one more of these things. And the reason I want to read it is because I read the wrong one, actually. I started it that way. But the reason, this one is much more powerful than the one I read before. And this is another one. This is back, again, in 2003, where I was just really depressed. And here's what I said, I was dealing with these issues again for my blindness, and I was starting to see a therapist at that point. And I said, "Dear God, this is the last day of my fast, and I haven't done the praying that I said I was going to do. I feel like I haven't lived up to my end of the bargain. What does that mean? Does it mean that you're really not as high a priority in my life as I claim you are? Are you upset with me, disappointed in me? Well, it sure seems like it sometimes. Lord, this has been without a doubt the most painful year of my life. Why did all this have to happen? Why did you have to bring all these things to the surface, all these deep wounds that hurt like hell?
Mm.
All I can think of are these voices from my past and now my recent present telling me that I'm not good enough, that I'm not independent, that I could be doing more, etc. So why am I being bombarded with those voices? I just had another one come up telling me that I should spend a year at the National Federation of the Blind Training Center. That's a crazy group of people that thinks that blind people should, like, cross six-corner intersections.
Oh.
The thought of doing that makes me sick to my stomach, but I feel like I'm supposed to. Lord, one thing I found very disappointing is that so many blind people are not giving me the support I need.
Mm.
When I share my struggles with them, instead of getting empathy, I often get judgment, pressure, or what is intended as encouragement, but it just makes me feel inadequate. I feel so inadequate compared to other blind people. Other blind people cook, do laundry, fix computers, etc. Cutting meat is hard for me. Spreading butter is extremely difficult. And sometimes pouring things can be hard. Is it because I wasn't taught these things properly, or does my blindness make them more difficult? I suppose the answer is a little bit of both. I suppose if I had been taught these skills on a daily basis since childhood, I might be a lot better at them. But I was exposed to the tasks, and they were still harder for me. I spent 2 years trying to sign my name, and I can still barely do it, which is why I use an ink stamp. Again, Lord, why did you allow these things to come up? Why am I going through all this pain? And this is what God said. This is just brilliant. My dear, sweet little boy, I never get tired of telling you how much I love you. I am not the person you think I am. No, it's not just your imagination. I really do adore you and delight in you. Andre, these voices are plaguing you because you're listening to them instead of me. The more time you spend focusing on these people from your past and present and all their expectations of you, the less time you spend communing with me. You're allowing these voices to fill your thoughts instead of allowing me and my love and grace to reign in your life. It's a kind of idolatry. You've said it before, but I'll say it for you. Who are you going to believe? Are you going to believe these blind people and the professionals who work with them, or are you going to believe me? I'm saying this not to confront you, but because I feel for you. I feel deep compassion for you. I hate to see you struggling like this, but let me answer your question. I allow these insecurities to come to the surface because they've always been there, in the back of your mind. You just haven't acknowledged them. I've told you before, but I'll tell you again. These things you worry about are not that important. I want you to face these things once and for all, just so you can see that they're not a big deal. But you've been making a big deal out of them because people in your childhood made a big deal out of them. In a way, I'm bringing these things to the surface not because I think you need to deal with them, but because you don't really need to deal with them. If it helps you to get together with Michael B., that was my 12-step sponsor, and practice some of these skills, if that helps you heal, go for it. But don't push yourself. Andre, let me close with 2 points. First, trust yourself. You know where your strengths are and what your abilities are. If you don't feel comfortable doing something, don't do it. Sometimes it's hard for you to see yourself accurately, but you're not a lazy person. Far from it. If something is really important to you, you'll take the time to learn it. Look at what you did with your computer. Your dad actually said something very wise to you. He said you're going to have to set your own standards. And let me say something else to you. It is hard being blind. The people who say it's easy are kidding themselves. Your life is hard enough as it is. There's nothing wrong with doing some things to make it easier. Sure, this is the part where it ends. He says, don't ever do something out of a sense of obligation. You've heard my voice. It is not the voice of duty or obligation. My voice calls you with excitement, desire, and the promise of adventure. Trust that voice. I will never lead you astray. And I guess the reason I'm reading all that to you guys is a couple of reasons. One is so that people out there realize that, you know, you can talk to God about anything.
Absolutely.
Anything. I mean, here I am telling God that it's hard for me to cut meat. You know, I mean, that was something, by the way, that I was very ashamed of for a long time because I was told that I was made to feel like it was just hard for me because I was lazy. Well, that's not why it's hard. It's hard because I've got a disability.
Right.
Most blind people have a hard time with that, you know. And so, you know, there's nothing that is petty to God. There's nothing that God is, there's nothing that is, that you have to be ashamed of. You know, what does the Aransch book say? It's a comfort to the human being, to know that God knows all your thoughts. So
absolutely,
that's the only reason. That's, you know, and I just want to, you know, I hope that, you know, hope I've encouraged anybody who wants to try this. And I'll put in a shameless plug here. This summer, I'm going to be doing a workshop on this topic at the Chicago Summer Seminar. So if anybody wants to come, I'd appreciate it. But Cheryl, any thoughts on any of this? Or
I thought those letters were really beautiful, Andre.
Well, thank you.
Really beautiful.
And I think they also show that we have the ability to tap in to a wisdom that is within us. And, you know, oftentimes the world clamors for our attention. And I just want to bring this back around to what Cheryl is holding up. Whether it is to take the time to ask and write the answer, as you have done, Andre, which you have illustrated is so powerful, I think, in the letters that you've read on air, not just today, but you've read some others that have really touched me, that the greatest broadcast is within us. And somebody at study group said something to me the other night that just really touched me and resonated to me. He said, you know, we humans are funny. We tend to put so much emphasis on things that don't really matter. He said, and we worry ourselves sick about something. He said that, do we really think, and this is how he put it, he said, do we really think that what the master physical controllers started all those millions of years ago that culminated in the life on this planet is going to be thwarted by what a group of Arabs are thinking? That was my reaction, Cheryl.
Well, you know, I want to say, too, that just the turning to God anytime, you know, whether a person makes that commitment, you know, to spend 5 minutes every morning or not, if we have any kind of a problem at all, and, you know, who doesn't have problems? I mean, people who think they don't have problems are people who are really in trouble. But anything at all, if we just turn to God in our mind, and no one else even needs to know, and ask God for help with that, we will get that help. Now, with my patients, I will always ask them if they have any kind of a belief system at all, you know, a spiritual belief system. And anyone who does believe in God, you know, and they've come in, because people don't just come into counseling for, you know, no reason. They usually come in because they're facing some kind of a big problem in their lives that really has them over a barrel. And I will suggest to them that they just turn to God in their mind in prayer and just ask God for help with it. And the ones who do that are, you know, usually so happy with the results, because they start to find that they're getting help with this issue, whatever it is.
Cheryl, let me ask you, do you have patients, do your patients know from the get-go that you believe in God?
No, not from the get-go.
Have you ever had patients who come to you who say they don't believe in God?
Sometimes I do, and if I have patients who are, like, dyed-in-the-wool atheists, to tell you the truth, in my heart, I don't have a lot of confidence that they're actually going to make progress.
But what do you tell them? I'm asking is...
What do I tell them if they're atheists?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it depends. If I think that they're at all willing to be the slightest bit open, you know, I mean, if people will tell me that they're not sure whether there's a God or not, you know, I find that kind of encouraging. Certainly better than atheism. If people are not sure that there's a God, I'll suggest that they have an experiment, that they make this experiment, and some of them will take me up on it, and, you know, almost always get good results. I say that if they really want to know whether or not there's a higher power, I suggest that every day, you know, whenever they can remember to do it, they just turn in their mind, you know, to God and just are honest, you know, with him and you know, and say to him, look, I don't even know whether you're really there or not, but if you are there, I would like to know it, and I would like to know whether you really care about me and my particular problems. And I tell them that if they'll continue doing that for a while and really care about, you know, if they're really curious about wanting to know, one way or another, they're going to get some kind of an answer that's going to mean something to them. It might be through something somebody says to them. It could be through a book that they pick up. It could even be through something they hear on television. But that one way or another, they will find that they get an answer to that question.
Hey, Cheryl,
and that works.
Some questions have come up on the board about your occupation, and are you a doctor? And can you expound on that a little bit?
No, I'm not a doctor. I'm a licensed clinical social worker.
Okay. And I have had people in your profession tell me that sometimes there's an issue with bringing God into their work. Do you find that's true, too? I mean,
there's a lot of therapists who believe that, but I'm not one of them.
Okay, good for you.
No, really. There's a lot of things that a lot of therapists believe that I don't agree with.
But
so
you know what, Cheryl, you're also in private practice. I think part of what's going on is people who work for the state and stuff.
No. That's not true, Andre.
Okay.
I'm talking about people that are in private practice that feel this way, and a lot of therapists do feel this way. And, again, I don't agree. I mean, you know, first of all, I will ask people if they have any kind of a belief system. And, you know, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to, you know, argue with them about their belief system. I mean, I will say that there have been times in the past that I've made some pretty serious mistakes. I mean, I met this one woman, for example, who I thought was a truth seeker. And, you know, this was the very first session I had with her. And, you know, I was, for one thing, I made the mistake of even mentioning the Urantia book with that first session, which was a big mistake. But another mistake I made, and I have to take full responsibility for this one, was she was a believer in Wicca, and I said to her, oh, you can do better than that.
Oh.
Big mistake. Big mistake. And not only was it an example of a lack of self-awareness on my part, it was kind of also an example of a lack of self-mastery, letting my mouth run away with me. And she ended up being so angry with me. She wrote me a letter, and I mean, I apologized. I mean,
she was a Wicca, you said?
Yeah, she was into Wicca. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Did she continue to be your patient after that?
Oh, no. I mean, you know, she was so angry with me that even though I had apologized, you know, she was too angry with me to continue to see me.
My friend Lenny said to me once about, you know, we were having a conversation about religionists, and I was expressing some frustration with where certain religionists were at, and his comment was, Paula, that's just their scaffolding. You shouldn't be shaking their scaffolding. And I love that comment because it gave me such a vivid mental image of this poor person hanging on for dear life.
Yeah.
While I shake the heck out of their scaffolding, you know. And whatever that scaffolding is, God can build on it.
Absolutely.
But it's what God has led them to, and He's building on that for them. And because He knows they needed that, whatever it is, they needed it. And it's something He can build on, and who am I to shake it? And
true.
I do think, Cheryl, if you tell people God is in you, that's something that most people can't disagree with, regardless of where they, you know, that you have a higher power within you. Listen to the inner broadcast first, you know. Ask the infinite source of wisdom within yourself. I think those are powerful truths that are almost irrefutable for most people.
Well, but most of my patients who believe in God are usually they're basically Christians. And, you know, if they're willing to just pray to God, you know, in their minds, I don't usually say to them, God is in you, because that's not really, you know, part of their belief system, even though, you know, Jesus said the kingdom of heaven is within you. I try to work with what's there, and, you know, if they're willing to just turn to God and talk to Him in their mind, and they do that, it's a huge help for them, and not only does it help them with whatever their problems are, but it also helps affirm their faith, too.
Right. You know, speaking of praying, one thing I'd like to do, Cheryl, if you're comfortable with it, I'd like you to if you could, and we could do this right now, we could do it in the next few minutes, whatever, but I'd like to, before we close the show for sure, I'd like you to pray for our listeners.
Oh, sure, I'd love to.
On the air, and pray that they would, that, you know, if there are those who have never done this kind of intimate communion, there may be people out there who just read the Urantia book as an intellectual head trip, and I'm not singling anybody out for that. I don't know I'm not naming anybody. I have no idea who's done. Because I know, because one of the things that frustrated me when I first started going to study groups, now this is changing a lot, but one thing that frustrated me initially when I first started going to study groups was how, you know, I felt like it was just an academic exercise for a lot of people, you know. I mean, I would go to fundamentalist Christian churches because, you know what, I got my spiritual needs met. People praise God, they worship together, they pray together, you know, and then you could talk to people about, this is what God did in my life this week. You know, I remember asking a Urantia reader once, do you have a personal relationship with God? And he just kind of freaked out. He's like, oh, wow. It completely took him, you know, shocked him, you know.
I agree.
And I think it's You know, and so I'd like if we could, I thought, why don't we just do that right now? If you would pray for our listeners.
Oh, sure.
And just,
well, thank you.
And just kind of just encourage those who are out there who want to start trying to do this. Maybe they haven't tried this, or maybe they need an extra boost here of motivation, as I've said before, you know, or whatever it is. You know, just for those, if you could pray for our listeners.
Oh, sure. Well, thank you, Andre. I'm privileged. Okay. Father, we are so grateful to have this opportunity to turn to you and to know that you're with all of us, every single one of us. And we're also grateful, too, to have the benefit of the Urantia book. And Father, I just ask that you help every single one of us make progress in turning to you, make progress in getting better and better every day. Help every single person, Father, that's listening right now or that will be listening to this in the future, help them all to know that the way to you is very easy and very doable, and that if we'll just turn to you more and make a commitment to spend just a little time with you every day, you'll bless us with growth and with the knowledge that you're there with us through every single thing we go through in life. So, Father, I'm just asking, help us all to do your will, and we just thank you for everything, Father. You know, it's just we can't even fathom how much you love us. And I ask this, Father, in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Thank you, Father.
So, any more call? We don't, I guess, have any more callers, do we, Paula?
Well, Lou has called in just to listen. He informs me on the on the board, but maybe we can get him to say something. Shall we try? Hey, Lou.
Hi, Paula. Hi, Andre.
Hey, Lou.
I know you said you just wanted to listen, but you have the dubious distinction of being our only caller. So
I made a note of that on the board that no one's called in. I really don't have anything to contribute germane to today's subject matter except to say that we're having a lot of fun on the chat board today.
Yeah, Cheryl, just so you know, Cheryl, I kind of keep an eye on the chat board just so that, you know, and we do have a lively chat board often, and people ask questions on the board, and I try to get them on the air if I can. And so Lou is a regular on the chat board, as is Bro Dave and Larry Watkins and Mark Erickson and Dave in Canada, and they're all listening, and they have a lot to say, and we get guests on there. Dr. Dave also is in just moved to Northern California. So we have a great and lively chat board every week, and they've been lively, even though we haven't had any callers. So, but Lou was having a hard time hearing, and that's just the problem we have with internet radio. I don't know how to solve it. It just depends on the connection you have that day, and so he called in to listen.
I have a quote from the book that is germane to today's subject matter relative to either setting up a rigid regimen of praying at a certain time. I can't tell you where it's from, but it says, "When to pray, I will not say.
Yeah.
When the spirit that dwells within you may move you to the utterance of those petitions which are expressive of your inner relationship with the Father of spirits."
Mm.
Oh, I concede that some may do better on a schedule, and some will be more spontaneously moved.
You know, I think that's a good point, and I think that, you know, we do need to make a conscious effort to spend time with God on a regular basis. And certainly if we do every day, and, you know, the way I feel about it, I was just talking to my father this morning, and oftentimes I reflect about who I was as a child, and I was a lonely child, and the Father was there for me, and often I tell him, well, you know, I'm your kid, you raised me. It wasn't that my parents weren't there and weren't available for me. But they were very laid back. Mm. And I don't think they realized how much I craved to be with them. And I had older siblings, and they didn't really crave to be with me. I was like the little snotty kid that they didn't want around, you know. They wanted to be with each other, but not necessarily with me. And so that's what kind of made me lonely. I grew up on a busy street. There weren't a lot of other kids. And so I spent a lot of time in my own heart and, by myself. But I never felt alone, ever. Not as long as I can remember have I ever felt alone. And when I say lonely, I mean hungry for human companionship, but I never felt hungry for celestial companionship. I know that probably sounds odd, but years ago I wrote a poem, and I'd just like to share it because it's about prayer. It's called The Unseen Listener. This was when I was a teenager I wrote this poem.
Wow. This is before the Urantia book, right?
Yeah. It goes, "Oh, for all the silent words I've spoken, in phrases that were full, unbroken, and meanings that no spoken word could say. Alone, I've poured my heart out, and every time I start out saying only what comes first for me to say, though I never stop to wonder who had heard my symphony in blue, for no human ear could have heard a single word. Oh, the words of rapture I have known, and all were spent while all alone, and yet I know, gut deep, somebody heard."
Mm. Very beautiful, Paul.
It is beautiful.
Very beautiful.
And I'm really impressed that you wrote that as a teenager. It reflects the eloquence that you have today.
You know what I have found, Andre, in some ways, that when I was younger, my mind was so much more clear and inspired.
Wow. I can't imagine. That would be dangerous. I can't imagine that because you're already so clear and inspired today. I don't know what...
No, I mean, I reflect on that often and say, you know, years of heavy responsibility for family and I don't know how else to describe it, has taken that, you know, the creativity. My dream has always been, you know, how the Urantia book tells us those things that we didn't get to pursue in this life.
Yeah.
We will in the next, and not to feel bad about that.
Yes.
And that is a promise. I mean, I've taken it so to heart.
Well, we do have eternal life, and it's such a comfort to know that.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
And eternal life in which to really have, you know, self-actualization.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that I would love to pursue in the next world is drama.
Oh, yeah, me too.
This may come as a surprise to you guys, but I'm very dramatic. And I would love to pursue that in the next life. It's not going to happen here. I appreciate it. It's okay.
Well, and you know, yeah, but you know, I think even in this life, Paula, I mean, you know, the creativity is still within you, and it, you know, it might not be drama, or it might not be, you know, having a huge career in something, but you know, when you have time to just be alone, you know, anything creative that you know feel like doing, you know, whether it's just creative writing or whether it's you know something, drawing or music or something like that, you can still do those things. It doesn't have to be on a professional level, but even just I think that if, that for any of us, doing something creative is something which you know, it helps our growth. It's good for us, no matter on what level we do it.
I agree. You're right, Cheryl. And you know, we need to maybe take time to be inspired. And
or even if we're not inspired. I mean, I think if we just, you know, I think this is one of the things that I'm, you know, trying to say too, is if we just take a little time, no matter what it's for, we don't have to be inspired. just the starting it, the inspiration will come. Maybe not at that moment, but it will sooner or later come.
Yeah.
Because it's like we're saying to God, in a way, okay, you know, here I am, I'm ready, I'm willing to be creative in some kind of a way, you know, just whatever it is. It sort of opens up that doorway again.
Right. Exactly. Hey, our good friend Lou just posted on the board that quote I was quoting, and let's share it. I can't tell you where it's from, folks, because I didn't look it up. Lou did, but hey, Lou, are you still with us?
I am, and I didn't grab all of it. There's obviously a character limitation on the chat board, but you probably know the rest by heart, Paula.
Go ahead, read it to us, Lou.
Actually, I lost where it was.
Well, I have it right here on the board. I'll read it. It says, "Nevertheless, those things which you so earnestly long to do on earth and which circumstances so persistently denied you, if, after acquiring true moda insight in the Maharaja career, you still desire to do, then you will most certainly be granted."
Yes.
Every opportunity to fully satisfy your long-cherished desires.
Does that mean I'll be able to be a rock and roll DJ? Because that's something I've always wanted to do and never got a chance to.
Bro, Dave wants to be a musician. You go, bro. He says for 1,000 years at least.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's important. It's important to remember that, to think of ourselves in an eternal way, that we have more than enough time to pursue all the beautiful, wonderful things that exist within the universe of ourselves.
I think that's one of the great advantages that we as readers have, is not only do we have an expanded cosmology, but we have an eternalized time frame. We don't look at life as a single human lifespan because we know better.
Absolutely. I completely agree. It's definitely, and it gives you a whole different philosophy and attitude towards life when you realize that this short life, we don't need to try and express everything and experience everything just in this short life. It's not going to happen.
Right, and I think we drive ourselves crazy sometimes thinking that it will. And we end up being frustrated because our expectations didn't come to fruition.
Mm.
You know, which is really sad. I always think of that great story from the Jesus Papers about Jesus coming down into Jerusalem on the back of an ass, and all the apostles coming down into Jerusalem with him, and each one was most of them were filled with consternation and anxiety, except for the Alpheus twins, who thought it was the greatest day ever. For them, it was like a wonderful parade, and everybody was honoring the master, and they just thought it was the greatest day ever. And I've pondered, what is the difference between, you know, we know the Alpheus twins were simple. They were more childlike in their thinking. And the difference between them and the other apostles who had so much angst in this event and couldn't just enjoy the moment like the Alpheus twins did, was because they had expectations.
Well, this is true, but, you know, I've done a lot of thinking about the Alpheus twins, who, you know, asked Jesus a question maybe once in the entire 4 years, and they alone, out of all the apostles, were the only ones whose job was done, and they were, you know, basically sent home.
Right.
You know, they were not very intelligent.
No.
And you know, it's like the bigger the back, the bigger the front. You know, when I think about what it means to ascend the circles and what the book says about the cosmic circles and how it has to do with balanced growth, you know, the less intelligent a person is, then in a way, the easier it is for them to be balanced. But the more intelligent a person is, then it requires that in order for them to be balanced, in order to come up to a higher intellect, they need to be more spiritual. And I think the hardest thing is to be more emotionally balanced. So So, you know, the other apostles who had, you know, all these issues, they, I mean, on the one hand, they had the issues, you might say, as who does not have issues. But then on the other hand, they had the potential for growth and for, you know, doing great things. And, you know, and they did. I mean, it's amazing when you think of the growth of the apostles.
Yes.
You know, in terms of how they spent the rest of their lives after having been with Jesus, having how they started out, and then how the things that they did, the faith that they exercised, and the courage, and the, most of them ended up, you know, being martyred, and yet they went through it with courage, which is amazing.
Yeah, you know, what you just said reminds me of a great quote from one of my favorite sections in the Jesus Papers, Instructions for Teachers and Believers.
I love that one.
Yeah, and he says, "Forewarn all believers regarding the fringe of conflict which must be traversed by all who pass from the life that is, as it is lived in the flesh to the higher life as it is lived in the spirit. To those who live quite wholly within either realm, there is little conflict or confusion. But all are doomed to experience more or less uncertainty during the times of transition between the two levels." And I think, you know, that the Alpheus twins were kind of wholly in the one level.
Right.
And what you were saying is that the apostles were kind of moving in. They were moving through the fringe of conflict because they were seeking the higher levels. They were on their way to the higher levels. And,
well, and the more you have, the more is expected of you.
Exactly. And so that's true, you know. I mean, a lot of times we can let go of expectations because a lot of times that conflict is just in the moment. It robs us of the joy of the moment, you know. And I guess that was
very
my point during that story, that the Alpheus twins had a wonderful time because they weren't so much in their heads about it. But on the other hand, you know, we're complex human beings.
We're very complex.
Yeah.
And the world we live in is very complex, and it's, you know, and one thing is true also, you know, people will, you know, say sometimes very negative things, and, you know, and that's another thing that we, that everyone has to deal with.
Right. So the bottom line always is, for the Urantia book, and I think in all of us, and what we're blessed to hold up for the world, is that we can have a relationship with God, and that we do have a relationship with God in and of ourselves, and that's the goal.
Yes, and God is always available to help us. I mean, at any moment, you know, we can just, you know, turn within, even if we can't close our eyes, for example. Even if we're driving in our car, for example, and we can't close our eyes and just turn to God in our mind and just say, "Father, just, you know, just help me right now. You know, help me to do your will. Help me to, you know, help me to drive through this rainstorm where I can't even see in front of me. Or, you know, help me to just deal with this traffic and you know, I'm feeling so stressed and I feel like I'm going to lose it. But please just help me do it." And that's the kind of prayer where you get like an instant help. Amazingly.
I call that inviting God into the moment and the
Absolutely.
Power of the moment. And I've heard some amazing stories about people who just in the moment ask for God and some help comes. That is just amazing.
Oh, yeah, I love to hear these stories from people. You know, you know, the book says that believers talk to other believers about these things. That, you know, it's not to convince unbelievers, but to share with other believers these things, because, you know, it's always great to get our faith confirmed.
Exactly. It's what could be greater than that, really?
Absolutely.
Yeah, the book calls it mutual edification.
Yes.
You know,
hey,
I want
to... Andre, are you there?
I am.
Okay, you're just listening, I guess,
yes.
Huh?
I'm here.
Well, we're coming down to the end of the show. It's six. We have 6 minutes left.
I wanted to pick up on our guest's comment about God is always available to help us. Somewhere in the book it says that if you believe that the Spirit of God indwells you, then we have anywhere, anytime, immediate access to God that is not dependent upon stained glass or candles or incense or rituals or ordained priesthoods or cathedrals or anything.
Mm.
And that immediate access, I think, is that something that we're picking up on whenever the mood strikes.
Yeah. You know, I'm so glad you said that, Lou, because for me, and I wanted to make this point, oftentimes I have found that while I am doing something that keeps my conscious mind busy, that doesn't take a whole lot of concentration, like, say, writing a letter to a business associate or something like that, or that I really have to concentrate on doing the task at hand. If it's a mindless task that keeps my hands busy, like gardening, like washing dishes, my superconscious mind kicks in and I have some of my greatest conversations with God.
Mm.
Some of my greatest insights come from there while my hands are busy doing some mindless thing. I don't know if other people have that experience or not. I just know I do. Great insights come to me at those times.
I agree. Mindless tasks where you're using your hands but not necessarily your head, it's like it frees your mind to enter those deeper realms and make
connection. That's a very Zen Buddhist concept. There's a guy named Alan Watts. I used to like to read a lot. He was a Zen Buddhist, and he said he had a book called Behold the Spirit, and he said that there needs to be a spiritual way of digging potatoes, a spiritual way of washing dishes, a spiritual way, So I definitely think there's a lot of validity to that.
Well, the life of Brother Lawrence is a very inspiring thing. He was kind of a very simple monk, and he was, he had his mind on God all the time. He was always talking to God. And while he was doing all those mindless things.
There's a lot to be said for that. I mean, we've kind of hedged at that you can go from spending 5 deliberate minutes a day to just inviting God into your whole day. But
no matter what, though, there is usually intention involved on our part.
Right.
I mean, if our intention is to, try to be thinking of God all the time, well, that's great. Of course, we're probably not going to be thinking of him all the time, so that if we end up feeling, guilty or feel like we failed because we're not doing it 24/7, that's not a good thing.
Well, and also, with all due respect, I don't think we're supposed to think of God 24/7. I mean, Jesus had unbroken communion, that's true, but even the Aransha book says that Jesus was not just a religious man exclusively preoccupied with religious feelings. There's a place where it says something like that. I mean, I think, if you only thought of God all the time, I don't know how you could. I think you'd be like hyper spiritual, but you would be. It's just that whole thing about being so heavenly minded, you'd be no earthly good. You'd be kind of like a. I guess if you were a monk, you could do that, and if you're called to do that, I think that's fine. But I think that there are, since we are also supposed to be of service to other people, we need to also think of other things, like thinking of other people. We need to think of. I can think of, like, for example, if I were writing a novel, I couldn't be thinking of God all the time while I was writing the novel. And there are a lot of things that, there's just a lot of, I'm not so sure that's always desirable that we think of God all the time. Maybe, I don't know, I'm not so sure about that.
You know what's more desirable is to think, I shouldn't say more desirable, what I wish I could do is remember to invite him in when I need him the most. Like when somebody cuts me off in traffic.
Yeah.
That, I think, would be a real... That if I could remember to do that, I would feel really good.
Well, somebody who I find, is around these days and quite well known and really a positive influence is Joel Osteen.
Oh yeah.
I think he's great, really, really great. And he, he is such a normal type person who really is, very, very dedicated to God, and he uses also the negative feelings, which he talks about quite freely, almost as a reminder to turn to God.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that is incredibly important. Very important.
Well, I used to have a theory about reaction versus reaction. Like, maybe we cannot control our thoughts, but we can control the way we react to our own thoughts. And
yes.
We can disavow and be ashamed of some of our thoughts.
And we can also control what we put into our minds. That's another thing we can do. We can control our thoughts indirectly. I think it's kind of hard to control indirectly, but indirectly we can.
Well, I don't know that we can control the thoughts that come into our minds, but we can control whether we choose to dwell on certain thoughts. And there are certain thoughts called cognitive distortions that are negative and not true and downright harmful to a person.
Right.
Right. I think we're getting down to the wire here, aren't we, Paula?
We are almost off the air. We are now off the air.
Cheryl, if anybody, I don't know if you're, I probably should ask you off the air, if anybody wants to contact you by email or anything, is that okay with any?
Sure.
Okay. Why don't you give your email out for the listeners?
I will, but I just have to warn, you know, it's just important to warn people that I do not check my email every day. I'm not one of those people who checks their email every day.
Cheryl, if you just had more self-discipline, you would check your email every day.
Yeah, well, that's true.
if I
made it a habit, and
that's
also
right.
If I had more self-discipline and the fact that once I go online, I'm then prone to my my addiction of playing Free Cell.
Oh.
So, which is, I mean, you know, a little of it is okay, but, you know, if I start doing it too much, it really is a big waste of time, so... One of the ways I deal with that addiction of mine is just to not go online all that much.
Well, what is your email, Cheryl?
My email address is, this is all lowercase letters, Sherry3, S-H-E-R-Y, numeral 3, at AOL.com.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for allowing us to access that. That's great.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Best.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, my dears.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Andre, see you in Chicago.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's cut off.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. If you would like more information about the Urantia Book, or if you just have comments or questions, please feel free to email us at cosmiccitizen@xnet.com. That's cosmiccitizen@xnet.com. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.